Welcome back to Matchday Matinee, where every week we combine our love of football and films to dive into the cinematic takes of the beautiful game. My name is Mark Alarum, and thank you for joining us in this, our premiere episode of Season 2. With me today is Adam Ducker, who looked electric in last night's pickup match, attacking the flanks with his lime green North Mississauga jersey. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much. You're too kind.
Fantastic. Also joining us is Raghav Sandhu, who would have been in Brentford right now, probably listening to the sounds of Corrupt FM if it hadn't been for the coronavirus.
Yeah, I would have been in Brentford, at least, you know, wanting to watch them at the now what is the old Griffin Park. They're moving into a new stadium. Unfortunately, they did not get promoted, but it would have been really nice to see. That's a sort of second team of mine. But how are you, Mark? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good. Yeah. I'm trying to stay active. I got a bike, so nice. I've been trying to go a few times a week. I'm a bike guy now, Googling bikes and stuff. I might start a bike podcast. You never know.
There you go.
I'll probably lose interest in a couple weeks, but who knows? Yep. So, new season, new look, new theme song. Gave everything a fresh coat of paint in the off season. Never truly satisfied with the last look. The theme song had kind of like a laissez-faire, kind of French cinema feel to it.
Sauntering in, yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to give everything a bit of an update. So, hopefully everyone enjoys that.
Sure.
You guys ready for today's film?
I definitely am.
Ready as ever.
All right. So, today we're looking at When Saturday Comes. It's a 1996 English film from Pint O' Bitter Productions. Sean Bean stars as Jimmy Muir. Am I saying that right, Adam? Muir?
Yeah, Muir.
As Jimmy Muir, as a hard-drinking brewery worker in the city of Sheffield. His entire life has been orientated by football, and he possesses the potential, but he has never had the courage or discipline to make anything of it. Starring alongside Sean Bean is Emily Lloyd as Annie Doherty, Keith Postlewaite as Ken Jackson, coach of Hallam FC, Craig Kelly as Russell Muir, John McInerney as Joe Muir, Ann Bell as Sarah Muir, and Melanie Hill, Sean Bean's actual ex-wife, wife at the time, divorced shortly after filming, as Mary Muir. So what do you guys think of this movie? Just some general thoughts before we kick into the plot.
You can go ahead.
I really like it, but I don't know how much I want to put on the table right now about my somewhat, if you guys want to dig into it, I do have a certain bias towards this film. Part of which you might know, but the second part you definitely don't know. I've never told you guys this before. So nearly my entire dad's family, side of the family, are from Sheffield. So I have a certain nostalgia to this film. We also went to Sheffield Hallam University, so I'm very familiar with like Hallam FC. But my big thing that I've never told you guys is I'm actually related to Sean Bean.
Ooh, wow.
Wow. So
there goes half my plot synopsis.
My
great grandfather, my great grandfather, I guess his wife married his wife, so his sister in law essentially from that wife married Sean Bean's grandfather, Harold Bean. But the funny thing is, growing up, I was always told, hey, we're related to Sean Bean. And there was always an uncle at like a family reunion that would joke, oh, when's Sean getting here? And I just grew up thinking, this is bullshit. This is one of those things that everyone from Sheffield says we're related to Sean Bean. But maybe like 5 years ago, Sean Bean did like a charity football match at Bramall Lane where he coached a Sheffield United All-Stars team. And afterwards, they had an event. My cousin was there. Sean Bean was there, had a couple of drinks, but he was there with his mum. So my cousin went up to him and started trying to explain the family tree to him. And Sean Bean kind of fobbed her off. And then apparently his mum went, no, listen to him. Listen to her. That's your grandma she's talking about. So they drew out a little family tree and kind of mapped it all and realized that actually, yeah, we are related. And then my dad later found the marriage certificate from the marriage that essentially joins the two families. And lo and behold, the witness to the wedding was one William Ducker, my great-grandfather.
That's amazing.
Kind of proved the whole story. So I have a certain bias towards this film, my love of Sheffield, and the fact I'm kind of related to the lead actor.
It's so, Adam from
the
North.
Put that on the table.
Yeah, Adam from the North. And for those of you who don't know who Sean Bean is, he was Ned Stark on HBO's hit series Game of Thrones. So that's why I'm making Adam from the North jokes. Yeah, I mean, when you asked earlier, what do I think of this movie? Obviously, I don't have such an eloquent response like Adam. I'm not related to anybody on that movie or any movie for that matter. But I really like movies that show real clubs and maybe, you know, the area that those clubs are from, especially like the north of England. I enjoyed Sunderland Till I Die as well, even though that's a documentary, but I generally like films that are shot in the area as a real life professional team and show the people of that area, show the actual city, because it feels all the more real. And yeah, I thought the movie was pretty good.
Yeah, I get what you're saying 100%. It's almost kind of like when we did Ultras, and it was like a love letter to the Naples region, where you can kind of see that somebody who made it was connected to that area, and there was tons of little touches that meant the world to them. So even though I wasn't over the moon with this film, I can still definitely appreciate so much love being put into it. And even the look of the film, how everything was just rough, like even from the get-go, like it was just rough and like a gritty feel just kind of permeated everything. So
even from the opening shot, it's like a shot of the city going across, spanning across the city, and you see it's like an industrial city from the start. So they show you those two towers,
yes,
quite famous. Mm-hmm. They're called the Tinsley Cooling Towers. They're not actually there now. They got demolished in 2008 or something, I think. But even the longest time, that was like an iconic landmark. Like you knew you were in Sheffield where you saw those two cooling towers. And it's such an industrial thing. It's not a beautiful landmark to look at. It's like greasy, grimy towers that smog, like cooling steam's pouring out of.
Yeah. But I guess in a sense, I liken it to Goal, what we did at the end of last season, mm-hmm. where Santiago Munoz, you know, gets a chance with Newcastle United, and they actually show the city of Newcastle. They show what it looks like. They show the waterfront and just the streets. And I felt equally as much for this film that actually showed the city of Sheffield and the town of Sheffield and just its surroundings. So it was, and the storylines were kind of similar, actually, if you think about it.
This is almost a local lad version of Goal, kind of. It's a lot more like lesser stakes, I guess, ultimately.
Yeah, it's kind of like a common movie trope, right? Like a local guy does good.
Yeah.
Less Hollywood for sure, but
this film feels more grounded than Goal, certainly, because definitely, like, we can get in it as we talk to the plot, but he kind of has his chance and then blows it, and he doesn't get his second chance like immediately. Like, you get the sense that a lot of time passes and he really has to graft just to even try out. It's not like Santiago where it's like, all right, we'll let him hang around for a bit longer and give him one more chance. Definitely has more realism to it, for sure.
Yeah, but there's still like some suspension of disbelief in it, and I'm sure we'll get to it during the plot. But the plot moves quickly when it's needed, right?
Yeah.
I think this movie's really layered as well. I mean, it deals with, obviously we'll get into these issues, but it deals with a few issues that are prevalent in people's lives, I guess I want to say, whereas I don't think Goal really did it. Goal was just a rags to riches story about a young kid just making it in Newcastle and then becoming a big time ball player, as one of the quotes in that movie go. But this is more layered, right? It deals with actual human issues to overcome and then become a player some quality.
Goal did kind of do some of that stuff with Santiago's father passing and then showing them as migrant workers in LA, kind of working on gardens and stuff like that. But it was all done with like such a kind of like a family film touch, whereas this was really heavy on like these poignant moments. And one kind of like feel that I got to it was like, this is almost like the Joker of soccer movies. Like, did you guys watch Joker?
Yeah.
Where it's just like all these things happen to this one guy and it forms him as a person. Like, you could take the score from Joker and use it in this movie and it would fit perfectly.
Yeah.
Like 100%. But it had that feel of kind of like grief porn. Like, it was just one sad thing after another happening to him, where it's overwhelming at some point.
Yeah. It's interesting as well, because we are likening it to Goal, which is true to some extent, but Goal, you'd feel comfortable watching with your kids. This movie is not a kids movie. I mean, there's nudity. We don't recommend that you watch this movie with your kids, even though it is a similar kind of story arc to Goal.
Well, I don't know. I guess if you grew up in Europe, things are a lot more lax. You could probably watch it there,
I guess.
But yeah, if you're in North America, don't watch this with your kids. It's not a Disney Plus film.
No.
Yeah. All right, you guys ready for some plot?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, let's go for it. All right, so it's the mid-90s, 1995 to be exact. And we're greeted with a saccharine scene of a young child doing kippy-uppies because, of course, it's a football. So why would you not? And this is in the blue collar South Yorkshire city of Sheffield. And this is all just the credits. So we move forward and we're greeted with a young redheaded boy, and he's being scolded by the school's headmaster for daring to dream of being a footballer. After a bit of peer pressure, this young boy, we learn, is Jimmy Muir. And he convinces his little brother, Russ, after a bit of peer pressure, to head down to the local pub for a bit of underage drinking. And after basking in a few sips of their pints, they're caught by none other than their father, who was also there having a few pints and neglecting his fatherly duties or work responsibilities. Whatever it is, he's in the pub daytime having a couple of drinks. So we jump forward a few years. We catch up with Jimmy, who is now working at a brewery way before it was cool. Now everyone works at like an indie brewery, and it's the hipster thing to do. But he's grown into a handsome pre-Lord of the Rings, but post-GoldenEye Sean Bean, who we just learned is related to our own Adam Ducker. We're introduced to the DAF crew that he works alongside, and we meet Jimmy's compatriots as they admire that morning's page 3 girl.
Oh, yeah.
And then they make some jokes that I'm not even sure were in English. They just said some stuff and...
They were, and it's like laughed. All just typical lads, like banter before that was actually a thing that people said. It's just typical. That would totally have been acceptable in that workplace in the 90s. And
okay. Yeah. Could you make out some of the stuff?
Yes, I can't remember what they said, but I could understand it all, yeah. Like, I laughed at that moment. Like, that was all genuinely funny to me. I wasn't confused.
Yeah, like the scene was funny, but I had no idea what they were saying.
Yeah,
yeah, that's another thing from anybody, at least from North America, that's watching this movie. It's in a Yorkshire accent. So for the most part, there's some dodgy accents
along the way. Like some of these actors are not from Yorkshire. Right. The most noticeable is the dad. He's definitely a Brummy, and he kind of flips between the two throughout the whole film. But it's definitely everyone's at least trying their best Yorkshire accent. Yeah.
Difficult to understand at times, and I remember before, you know, during we're watching the movie, some of us were asking for subtitles. So
Well, it's funny, YouTube will usually auto-generate subtitles, and with this movie they're just like, no,
it's all over the place. Yeah.
We're not gonna bother.
Yep.
It's here that we also meet Annie. So this is the brewery's newest hire, and she clearly has a thing for Mr. Muir, Sean Bean. Jimmy's dad also makes his return, and it turns out that he's still a deadbeat. He borrows some cash from Russ. Who we learn is a football program aficionado. So after a quick Sunday league match where Jimmy scores a screamer, but he ultimately loses because his keeper is not even aware that a football match is being played. Did you guys see that? Like,
that was a brilliant scene.
For some reason.
It's like he was checking his manicure or something.
I literally laughed out loud at that scene. Like, when I saw it on TV, I just started cracking up. I don't know why. Because I've seen that happen so many times in like House League and Sunday League that we play in, that it's just hilarious.
I've seen that with like 12-year-olds, but this guy was like, I thought he had like a post-concussion syndrome. So after this unreal match, they head down to the pub, and this is where we get a classic line where guys are checking out two of the girls there. Look at the ass on that. It moves like a bag full of fairies. Adam, explain this.
I don't know what the bag full of fairies thing is, to be perfectly honest, but yelling about a woman's ass and saying what it looks like is pretty common. Oh,
my camera? Oh, there you go.
Came out of focus. But yeah, I've never heard the saying a bag full of fairies, to be perfectly honest.
Was it a bag full of fairies? Could have been a bag full of carrots. I have no idea.
I don't know.
We'll assume it's bag full of fairies. I guess the way, I don't know, magical, maybe?
We'll have to find the script.
I'm looking it up now whilst we talk.
Why don't you just ask Uncle Sean? Jeez, man.
You know what? They'll all be asleep, but I will put in my family WhatsApp and see if any of them know it. And then we can tweet that as a fact after this episode.
We're going to follow up on Twitter with this. Okay. So Annie gets her date with Jimmy, and this is where she playfully teaches him a bit of Irish. So our first footy fact is that Emily Lloyd was originally cast in the role of Annie Doherty with a Northern England accent. But her attempt was considered too unconvincing by the film's director. So they just changed her accent back to an Irish accent, her natural accent. They figured, why bother? Somebody will notice. So next, we meet Pete Postlewaite, and he shows up to Jimmy's pub league match. And after a weird scene where he's blowing his nose for like 10 seconds, he walks over to Jimmy and he offers him a position at Hallam FC, which is a lower league side. And another footy factor in quick succession, Hallam FC's ground, Sandygate Road, it's actually in the Guinness Book of Records as the oldest football ground in the world. It's a little 1,000-person stadium, but it only has 250 seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever, I'm guessing you've been there, Adam.
Yes, but not for... No, I would have been there. I went when I was at university and I watched a couple of Hallam FC games. Cool. Like, that's one thing about Sheffield. It's like literally the birthplace of football. Yeah. So you've got that ground. You've got Bramall Lane, which is technically the oldest professional football stadium in the world. And then you've got Sheffield FC, who are officially recognized by FIFA as the oldest. They're like amateur as well, but they're the oldest football club in the world because they were the ones that sat and codified the rules that essentially became the law of the game. It's just one of those things that people assume football was born in like London or something, or Manchester, like the powerhouses, or Liverpool even. It's like, actually, no, football as we know it today and the Sheffield rules were all made. That's how I saw Pelé that time, because he was there to celebrate the formation of Sheffield FC.
Yeah, they actually pulled out the document with the original Sheffield rules.
Yeah, yeah, which the club actually had to sell to stay afloat, which is quite sad. But
oh, really?
Yeah, they used to be, I think they're still at Sheffield FC, and they get flipped between there and the National Football Museum because they don't own them anymore. But yeah, super old stadium.
So it's interesting you mentioned that the rules were, you know, made in Sheffield. The match between Sheffield FC and Hallam FC, which hasn't happened in a while, is actually called the Rules Derby.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. And they play by the Sheffield rules?
They play by, I think everybody plays by the Sheffield rules.
Yeah. Like
the FA rules is the ones that were introduced in like 1912, I think.
Yeah, but so they all
play friendlies in the
open. No, I'm pretty sure that they just play by regular football rules. I mean, the ones that we have now, but because football as we know it, most of the rules were made in Sheffield at that time, then that derby as a result is called the Rules Derby.
I think the offside rule is the only one that was a major difference between the two, from what I was listening to on a TIFO podcast, I want to say.
Yeah, and I guess the goalkeeper rules changed a little bit. Goalkeepers used to be able to pick up the ball anywhere, I think, before then. But yeah, anyway, we digress.
How would that work? So you could literally carry the ball to half? And then
I guess so, yeah. But yeah, I guess if you get tackled, you maybe have to drop it. I don't know. So that's how the divide happened with rugby, right? Because rugby football was where they decided, no, actually carrying the ball is more fun.
So it's also actually the oldest football fixture in the world as well. On top of being called the Rules Derby. And the reason they call it the Rules Derby is because it was originally played under the Sheffield rules. It will no longer be played under the Sheffield rules if they do tend to meet ever. So yeah, a little bit of history there.
The English game on Netflix, it talks about like the birth of English football. Is that Sheffield based or is it kind of twisted? No,
I've still not watched it properly. Mm. But I have heard that they do kind of mess with the facts there. They've merged a couple of teams into one.
Yeah,
like Blackburn or something, and there was a team called Olympians that they kind of merged into one team in the English game or something like that. Still got to watch it though, someday.
Hallam, also an interesting tidbit about Hallam FC. So in 1867, the club made history by winning the world's first ever football tournament, the Udan Cup. Yeah, the club still possesses this trophy at their ground. So
oh, wow,
yeah. That's pretty cool. Stop looking up stuff. It might be a trivia question later.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, no more football facts. But I feel like I'm well prepared for the trivia now. So,
you know what was weird about that, the stadium, was the dugout, the bench? It looked like a crypt. Did you guys see that in the... Well, I guess in the real stadium. You literally could have put another wall in there and it would have been like a really nice crypt.
Yep. I get what you say. A lot of non-league ones look like that in England.
Is it? Yeah. Just like a little brick wall?
Yeah, like a little brick wall, and then they sat down. Yeah, that's pretty common for older grounds. Or some of them will have replaced it with like a plastic shield now, but
yeah, the bubble. Then,
that would have been common, yeah.
It's like a dugout, yeah.
Yeah. So everyone is ecstatic about Jimmy's opportunity, except for his dad, and we learn that Pete Postlewaite is actually Annie's uncle, Ken Jackson. This episode is turning into like an Ancestry.com...
I know, unintentionally.
So, of course, Jimmy shines for his first match for Hallam FC. Now, the next scene, in the midst of a graphic love scene, as Raghav alluded to, between two of the palest people that I've ever seen, Jimmy gifts Annie a ring. And then this is where we catch our first glimpse of Sean Bean's actual tattoo, which states 100% Blade, because he is a massive Sheffield United fan.
The music during this scene is insane as well. It's just so over dramatic and just like... Oh, that's one thing that does kill this movie is the soundtrack. It's just like
the music during everything.
It's like, scenes that don't need movie have music have this like over the top dramatic, like orchestral music over the top. And that's one. It turns this lovemaking scene into some like epic thing. And it's just not, it doesn't deserve that gravitas at all.
Even the, like the training montages, like the height of montages was like Scarface when they have Take It to the Limit. And you're just getting pumped watching like Tony do his stuff. And then even with Gold, you have, I think we said Kasabian like during the training montages.
Yep.
And then in this movie is like adult contemporary, where it's just, it's not like, I don't even know what it is, like John Tesh, like just terrible music. Terrible. You know what, you guys know what I mean.
Yeah. If you could watch
it. I can't think of any artists. I don't listen to it.
No, I don't. It's not my type of music at all.
Not mine at all. So.
So then, this is where we also catch a glimpse of full frontal nudity of Sean Bean in one of the weirdest homoerotic scenes that we've yet to watch on the matinee. And this is saying a lot because we watched Diamantino on here.
Yeah.
So Ken Jackson pulls Jimmy away from the all-male nude tickle fight just long enough to let him know that he's been given a trial with Premier League side Sheffield United. And then this is where we get the scene where he's talking to Russ. And it's a very kind of heartfelt scene where he's always looked out for his brother, and he, you know, he gets his football programs for his brother. He takes care of him. He's a father that he's never had because Jimmy and Russ's father is absent most of the time. But he confides in Russ that he has this trial, and Russ tells him, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody, Jimmy. This is my secret, mine and your secret. Then we quickly cut to them sitting at the breakfast table, and his dad's like, "So when's the trial?" And you're like, what the hell, man? But after some apprehension, Jimmy accepts the trial, and he impresses enough that he's asked back for another trial. Jimmy later hits it big at the horse bets, winning enough to cover his struggling mother's utility bills because the father's been spending all of the family's money on bets and drinks that we consume. His luck then goes a bit south because after punching his foreman square in the face and getting fired, compounding the literal rain clouds over Jimmy's life, is Annie revealing to him that she's pregnant from their love scene a couple of minutes ago. But
one really weird bit about that scene, she tries to try and like trick him into getting an apartment together, and then what's she gonna do, wait till they move in together and then go, by the way, I'm pregnant. And she doesn't bring it up until he's like not interested in the apartment, and he's like, no, we can't do this. And then she's like, by the way, you know what I'm gonna say.
That's in, like, the pub, right?
No, he tells her in the apartment, I think, that they're looking at.
But before that, she's in the pub and she's like, Jimmy, I have to talk to you about
something. Yes. And the friend says, did you tell him yet? Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Okay, so the friend says, did you tell him yet? She says, no, I didn't. I'll tell him sometime. Anyways, let's go get drunk. And then hold up, you're pregnant.
Yeah. It's hilarious because he keeps, you know, as she's having this serious discussion with him, he keeps looking back at his friends like he's gonna miss out. Which is amazing to see where his priorities actually are. But
it's another part of this whole like working city thing. Like people just don't tend to grow out of that. Like,
true.
It's also not even just Jimmy look after Russ, but like you get a sense that all those other lads, if Jimmy suddenly wasn't around, they would all look after Russ as well. Because they're all in it together. This one of the lads and stuff. It's kind of this nice like atmosphere that they've all kind of got. And they've all known each other since school. Now all work in the factory. All save their money up just to booze every weekend. And it's kind of, so he doesn't want to miss out on anything. Just like how a kid wouldn't, right? Like a kid would be looking out, see what kids are playing football on the street and stuff. It's realistic, I think, for sure.
But that, like the industry there kind of died out in the 60s, right?
Like the big steel industry. 60s, 70s, like they had all the steel mills and stuff and they all started to shut. And then I guess the film, like the dad and Russ are both coal miners, right? And the coal industry all kind of got shut in the 1980s under like Margaret Thatcher, like slowly started to close down then. So this is just after that. So there were still some mines, but they were definitely on the decline. Right. So Sheffield had kind of had two tiers of it, like steel mills dying down because it was cheaper to make steel abroad. And then kind of the coal mine, the same thing, because they started moving away from predominantly using coal.
So what's the economy of that region now?
Sheffield, it was like a dead city for a long, long time, kind of buoyed by the city centre pretty much died down. You briefly see as well, when you see those two towers I was talking about, just to the right of there, there's a huge shopping mall called Meadowhall that opened in the 90s as well. that kind of revitalized the city, but also killed the city center. They've just started to, like, I just went back recently in January, right? And they seem to have, like, revamped the city center a lot and made it, like, there's more stores coming in and stuff and, like, restaurants and stuff. So it seems to be trying to be a bit more, like, upscale kind of. But, yeah, it's still definitely working class, still a lot of, like, the council flats, kind of what they live in. That's still a huge part of that city for sure.
Which is similar to a lot of the north of England, right? So Liverpool was almost in the exact same position that Sheffield might be in now or was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And they revitalized the city center, you know, put stores there, you know, redid the entire Albert Docks. And now that region is growing, right? So
yeah, same with Manchester as well. It's huge, like, cotton mills area. And now it's become, like, more cosmopolitan and, like, BBC moved down and stuff. So there's a whole bunch of these northern cities that are trying to find something else to be now that there's no industry there, right?
Right. No, that's excellent.
So we're going from a serious topic and back to Jimmy telling his mates at the pub he's only going to have one shot. And we cut straight from that to Jimmy motorboating a stripper while wearing a captain's hat.
It's amazing.
And it's a match made in heaven because she's also got the blades tattoo on her left buttock cheek. Yeah.
It's amazing. That whole notion of, I'm just going to have one. Those are famous, famous last words for many, many people.
Yeah. Never works out that way.
Just one. Yeah. So in true Jimmy Muir self-sabotaging fashion, he spends the night with the exotic dancer and shows up late to his second trial with Sheffield United, a hungover mess.
Right.
And he finds out about his escapades and she kicks him to the curb, obviously. So this is where we also find out that Papa Muir has stolen Russ's programs. But more pressingly, Annie struggles with what to do with her unborn child because she knows Jimmy doesn't want it. And she goes to a church looking for advice on what she should do. But as one life is created, another one ends. And this is where we cut to the coal plant where Jimmy's brother, Russ, and the father work. And Jimmy arrives just in time to find out that Russ has passed away in the coal mine. And was there an explosion or what happened here?
I think the mine just collapsed.
Yeah,
it kind of happened. Like, it was like poor stand. I don't think they had good standards in these things. Like no safety like we would these days if it existed.
Yeah. I heard a bunch of the Yorkshire accent and then they show up and Russ is dead and I had no idea what happened.
But
sure.
I tried to follow along. So on the brink of suicide, Jimmy walks the rail tracks and there's a speeding train bearing down on him and he relies on a flip of Russ's lucky coin to determine what to do. And I don't know if he picked heads or tails, but whatever one he picked, it lands on. He chooses redemption and he jumps off the tracks at the last moment, sparing his own life.
What's the saying? It's tails to get rid of all your fails or something like that?
Tails never fails? Yeah.
Tails never fails. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, tails never fails. That's it.
Yeah. And this is also how he determines if he's going to take the Sheffield trial or not at first. Yeah. But this near-death experience is a catalyst that Jimmy needs to ask for another shot at Sheffield United and winning back Annie's heart.
Right.
This turn is so sudden and it's not really earned, but...
And the other thing is, you're like an hour into a film that's only an hour and 34 minutes, right? And then suddenly it's like, okay, this has got to ramp up now. Yeah, and it, even though I said earlier, it does a good job of showing the seasons passing, like he's running in snow at one point, and it's kind of, or before that, it looks like autumn or fall. But it is still, it doesn't, and he's playing in the fog as well.
Yeah.
And it shows like Pete Postlethwaite looking like impressed by his attitude. But yeah, it just glosses over it all in a, yeah, shoddy training montage that's trying to be like Rocky kind of.
Yeah,
somebody was off screen just like this, like wrap it up.
Yeah, that's enough training.
You've got the budget for another 20 minutes to wrap it up. So Jimmy manages to win back Ken's trust, and Adam, as you said, he becomes Jimmy's own version of Rocky's Polly. So he not only gets Jimmy another trial, but he actually gets him a spot on manager George McKay's United side.
Yeah.
So after a few fixtures on the bench, Jimmy finally gets his chance to shine in the FA Cup semi-final against Manchester United at Bramall Lane. The pre-match balloons, is that like a Sheffield tradition? Just like bunches of balloons?
No, a lot of clubs do that. It's like a common thing in general, yeah.
I don't know if that's allowed anymore.
It is. I've seen clubs do it for special occasions. It's not a regular thing. And I guess at this point, the special occasion was that they're playing Manchester United, no?
Well, FA Cup semi-final.
Semi-final. Right? Yeah, which, if you want to be a hadn't for accuracy here
would be at Wembley.
FA Cup semi-finals and not played at a home ground. It wouldn't have been at Wembley then. It would have been at like a neutral venue. So they often use like Villa Park.
I remember.
They use Villa Park. They sometimes use Villa bigger Park, grounds. Yeah. So kind of an inaccuracy. But I guess they wanted to use the Sheffield crowd and stuff. It was the one chance they had to show them.
They're played at Wembley now, though, correct?
Yeah, they play all the because they need to pay off that debt.
I remember back in the day, teams playing at like Villa Park, especially comes out as one.
And then if it wasn't a Manchester team, they'd often play at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
So is it everything from the quarters on?
Semi-finals at a neutral venue, and then finals, obviously, at Wembley.
And then back then as well, they would have draws. If it was a draw, they would just keep replaying until somebody won the game. You know, it's a penalty. So sometimes you'd have a semi-final that goes to like three replays, and they play the final like 2 days after.
Yeah.
So it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah.
All right. So Jimmy finally gets his chance. He comes on for the Premier League side, but a reckless tackle leads to a foul that hands Man United a second goal. But the spirit of Russ appearing in the stands is enough to spur Jimmy on to put on the performance of his life. He's able to bring the Blades level with Manchester United in the semi-final. Now, finally, with everything on the line, Jimmy, I'm getting choked up here. Finally, with everything on the line, Jimmy heads to the spot and he scores a penalty kick that sends Sheffield into the FA Cup final. Roll credits. Why would Jimmy take that penalty kick?
Yes, that's the big thing. Yeah. I feel... like this match is they're losing 2-0. I think this match kind of does a good job of not being too overly spectacular. Like, he gives an assist for the first goal, which is kind of a header. There is a weird thing where the guy that passes him the ball is somehow magically in the box to score the goal. And it's like a big guy, like he couldn't run that quick. There's no chance. But still, it's semi-realistic. But yeah, you would not give. Because you've got to remember as well, this is Sheffield United in Division One at this time. Manchester United, a Premiership team. In a semi-final of the FA Cup, they wouldn't have given it to a younger, like former non-league footballer on his debut to take a penalty that late. It's just not realistic at all. And it's a shame because so much of his journey is kind of trying to be more realistic. And then they had to have that like Hollywood moment.
It's not even play like a Hollywood moment. It's not like it's spectacular in any way, right?
Yeah, and then it's weird, right? Because it just shows him celebrating and then it ends. It's not like they won the cup.
It's a Hollywood moment, not actually shot like a Hollywood moment.
It's
an earnest film. It's one of those things where it's like, even with like Liverpool, where like you'll never walk alone. Like if you were to just listen to that, if anybody listened to it without any kind of context of it, it's just kind of like, oh, this is kind of like, it's an okay song. You know what I mean? Like it's not a song you'd put on the radio to listen to or something?
No, I mean, not in this day and age. It's an old song, right? Jerry and the Pacemakers back in the 60s, I believe. But I think the beauty of it is when you have 50,000-odd fans, or almost 60,000-odd fans now singing in unison at one time is like, at that point, it doesn't matter what song it is. It's gonna give you goosebumps.
There's a connection to it. There's a local connection to it. Like with this movie, there's all these songs that I think, maybe Adam, you can speak on this. Maybe there is a local connection to these songs, but... just as a viewer, it's just kind of like, why would this song be picked? You know what I mean?
And then, so that's the other thing. Sheffield have a song that they sing before every game called, it's called Greasy Chip Butty, I guess. But it's like a cover of a John Denver song. But they sing it before every game, just like what You Never Walk Alone. And it's just a very like Sheffield song about drinking like a gallon of Magna and... having a greasy chip butty, and they sing that before every game, and they didn't even bother to include that. Like, that was the one thing they could have had that would have been uniquely Sheffield. Like, it's their song, no one else sings it. And it's kind of the same thing. Like, they'll start playing over the tannoy, and then it'll slowly fade out, and just the fans sing it. Didn't bother to include it.
Yeah. Probably cost to license it.
Maybe. But yeah.
All right. So, what do you guys think? Any general thoughts? Anything that popped into your head as we were going through the synopsis?
No. Go ahead.
No, you go. It's good.
I mean, just to reiterate the point that I made at the very beginning of the show, I think, when we were going through it and we were saying that there was all this, you know, things said in Yorkshire accent, it was very true to the area once again, right? True to the area where it's set, true to the team that it's trying to represent, and then just the talk, the way the lads are. Growing from the factory to the pub, I mean, it just is very realistic in terms of what would happen in that part of the world.
Yeah. Love letter.
I feel the same. And I think, yeah. I feel like this is a true, it happens less now, these like non-league players that appear from nowhere. And suddenly, like, the most recent example would be Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
But back in this era, it used to happen a lot more. Like, you had like players like Ian Wright and stuff who were, Ian Wright was a non-league player who suddenly got discovered by Arsenal and signed like relatively late, like 23, 24, and then just blew the league away and was like Arsenal's record goal scorer. So I feel like there is some realism to this. They do deliver, like, and even the way that he doesn't just come straight into the team and score like a wonder goal. Like, you see him sitting on the bench for a couple of games and getting like growing increasingly frustrated. Feel like it does a good job of that more realism of like a working class lad being good, and like even the way he gets found, like on a non-league, like there's fields all like that around England that are playing Sunday league where there's like 12 fields on a huge field, and play, and like old school managers would go and walk up and down those fields trying to find that one diamond that somehow still sat playing there. So it did feel realistic in that regard. I found the team talks funny. So there's the one when he's still playing for Hallam FC and Pete Postlethwaite walks in, he's like, let's beat these wankers. And then that's like it. That's his team talk. But then even when he's playing for Sheffield United later, the team talk that they give isn't much better. That guy's like, right, Jimmy, you're coming on. You were shit. Get out there. We should be losing by more. And then it's just like, that's a bit not what football was like in the 90s, I don't think. I think they would have had more team talks that actually than just yelling and blowing up. Mike Bassett.
Yeah. What's that one scene or series of scenes where that, I think at this point he's still playing for Hallam. Yeah, he's playing for Hallam FC. And there's this other player on the team that's kind of jealous of him.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like, he says something like he shouldn't even be on this team or something like that. And then as he's walking in, the manager is kind of like, oh, yeah, what do you think now? Right? Like, because Jimmy scores a few goals for Hallam FC, so that was interesting as well. Yeah, and it's like,
you should, I don't, give me a trial or something.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, I don't know that even if a player said something wrong, I'm not sure there'd be any manager that'd be like, yeah, see, like, he's good, you're shit, right? Like,
well, yeah, because Jimmy's gonna leave too, and he's gonna be stuck with this guy he just insulted to his face.
Yeah.
Well, funny enough, the coach of Sheffield United was actually the captain of Sheffield United in this film is actually the former captain of Sheffield Wednesday.
Is that Mel Sterland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, that's interesting. And then I guess the original scout they sent to see him, Tony Curry, is actually a really famous ex-Sheffield United player. And my dad always talks about him. He's like the best player he's ever seen. He was like a winger who was a very like entertaining player for back then. My like dad compares him to like George Best and stuff. How he could just dribble around people like magic. But he was like not... He lived in an era where English football, like many eras of English football, was not interested in flair players, so he only played for England like 17 times or something. But he doesn't talk in the whole film, he just stands there like shrugging his shoulders and like nodding and Jimmy does good things. But I had to check because they mentioned the name Tony Curry and I was like, wait, and I had to look up it's actually him. That is, I don't know what he looked like now, but that was him.
Interesting fact about Tony Curry as well.
You might wreck trivia here, forgot.
He actually played for the Toronto Nationals. He made six appearances for the Toronto Nationals that were part of the Canadian Professional Soccer League.
Was that the 80s?
That was 1983.
Yeah. Toronto Nationals.
Six appearances, one goal. Canadian Professional Soccer League, CPSL.
That would have been right post Blizzard era.
Yeah.
Blizzard became like an indoor soccer team around the Toronto Nationals.
The first Canadian Professional Soccer League lasted for just one abridged 73-day summer season in 1983.
Support CPL, you guys.
Yeah, sounds familiar. I want to go back to something about that guy you were talking about, the Raghav. It made no sense why that guy hated him. I thought they could have played on something there. They had the opportunity. Like, Sheffield's one of those cities that has two teams. They could have made out like that he was a Sheffield Wednesday fan or something and didn't like him because of that, or something to just play on. Because they have a rivalry that's kind of a healthy rivalry. It's not like they don't really hate each other the way some others do.
Yeah, it's not like Tottenham or Arsenal or something.
Yeah, it's not as toxic as that. So they could have played on that sort of, and it'd been a bit more friendly, and maybe it escalated to something. It was just really weird how they didn't.
I guess they were trying to go for that kind of rivalry, player rivalry, like what's his name, Kuno Becker or Santiago Munoz, and that center back.
Oh, the one that broke his inhaler. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, right. His name I forget, but I guess it just wasn't executed as well.
Yeah.
In terms of performances, I think I wouldn't point out any bad ones aside from Russ, but I'm not sure if he was meant to be played that way. But I thought in general, like Annie was a great character. Yeah. She wasn't ever not justified in what she was doing. I mean, Jimmy, for the most part, was an idiot for the first like 2/3 of the movie. Sean Bean played his role pretty well. It's just a matter of pacing. Like he would, from one scene to the next, he wouldn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, he'd go from being a cheeky lad kind of thing to like a raging like thing. And then the thing in the bookies where he's kind of being a chancer. Even that surprised me. I think that was meant to show his like downturn, but it didn't come across as that way. Because I thought he was going to the bookies to get the money to go back and pay the electricity bill. But actually threw all the money plus more away on the opposite bet to what his dad wanted. So they won all that money. Yeah. And I think it was meant to show you like, hey, betting's bad, but also you can win sometimes. It was kind of weird, mixed messages.
Yeah, because I guess he's never had a chance to become a footballer like he always wanted to be ever since he was the redheaded child. But he does still care for his family. He realized that he has to kind of fill that that father role for Russ, right? So there is probably some spite there. The father was kind of comical in some scenes. Like he played it as a jerk. And then other scenes, he was just kind of like a lovable idiot.
Yeah. But there was some like nuances to his performance even. Like when they're all at the pub at the end watching, like the dad remains like stoic until the end. And something my dad's always told me like about his upbringing, like Yorkshire men are taught like don't show emotions, you don't get emotional about stuff, and he doesn't start cheering right until the end when everyone like grabs him and he's just there like plain face. And it's like I can believe that he probably, and same with like how he's hard on Sean Bean, like Jimmy, like I think that's kind of actually expected like behavior from a tough Yorkshire man, like just do your bit, don't be a footballer, don't give in to like emotions and get on with it kind of.
Well, it's funny, like, don't show emotions. I think it's don't show any joy. Like, yeah, it's okay like nothing, to show rage, sadness.
Yeah. Any, like, masculine emotions, fine,
Don't show joy. Overall, pretty good film. I think it's time to move on to some trivia.
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So we're starting fresh. Just to recap, last season, Adam won. It wasn't a runaway victory, but he did do pretty well. I think it ended up being, like, 13-10.
Yeah, it was 12, close.
9-9. But Regev and I finished level, and this week you guys can get a healthy lead on me.
All right.
So first question, I'm not going to give you multiple choice because I want to hear some funny answers.
All right.
It's an easy kind of fun one. Regev, I'll let you go first. Why are there two blades on the Sheffield crest?
Why are there two blades on the Sheffield crest?
What does it represent?
Does it? Just a guess here. Is it like chopping off a head in the middle kind of thing? Like,
okay. Is that your final answer?
I guess.
Aggression?
Aggression, yes. Chopping off a head in the middle, just kind of like placing and just, you know.
They're kind of like Aladdin swords.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know, actually, the two blades, what they remind me of. So the Sikh, it's called the Kunda, which is a Sikh symbol. It actually has three blades kind of going. Yeah.
Living in Brampton, I know it well.
Yeah. So it kind of does remind me of that.
Okay. So what's your final answer?
It's
aggression.
Oh, you know, no, wait. I'm going to change my answer.
All right.
This is not, I don't think this is true at all, but it's like because there's two sides of Sheffield. So there's Sheffield Wednesday and just Sheffield United. I don't know, two blades representing the two sides.
Putting your rival on the, okay, that's
bold. I don't know. Okay. That's my final.
I like it. Adam?
Two things are in the back of my head.
Give me one.
One is they kind of look like...
Just one answer.
You can't say two. You got to give me one.
No. I'm just going to talk it through. One of them is kind of that it looks like the swords like that they would use in the Crusades.
Okay.
But then I don't think Sheffield's necessarily... I think it has something to do with like upholstery or something. Or like tailoring.
Oh.
This sounds stupid, before scissors were invented. Like, I don't even know when scissors were invented.
Can I give an answer that might not necessarily... Is that your final answer, Adam?
Yeah, I'm going to say something to do with like tailoring or something.
Okay, can
I'm just a random guess, but you know those two towers that Adam was talking about? Is it just representing those two towers, but in a more aggressive way?
You see, this is why when a logo comes out, there's a massive explainer graphic, and this is what this represents.
No one knows.
Yeah. No one knows.
Yeah.
All right. It's frustrating that I have to work on them and then everyone try. Anyways, you guys are both wrong.
Okay.
The city was a producer of cutlery during its manufacturing days.
Oh, the Sheffield steel.
Yeah.
So it's as simple as that.
That's all.
Why
it is.
Why is it like a knife and fork or something?
Yeah.
I got to put like a knifey spoon on there.
Aggressive swords, cutlery.
Use forks. No points. Sorry, guys.
No worries.
But I love your answers. The first goal in Premier League history was scored by Sheffield United player Brian Dean.
Oh, I thought that was going to be the question. Is it? Who is it? Damn it.
You're going to get this. So I'll let you go first. Which club was the goal against?
Oh. Everton?
Okay.
Okay.
Forgive?
Repeat the question again, sorry.
First goal in Premier League history. It was scored by Brian Dean, but who was it scored against?
Sheffield United, first goal in Premier League history. He says Everton. I'm just going to guess here. I'm going to go raise the stakes and say somebody like Nottingham Forest.
Oof, no. Both clubs were in the Premier League the inaugural season, but it was actually Manchester United.
Ooh. I was going to say I was going to say Arsenal, actually, was going to be my first answer.
But I thought you were leading up there when you said ramping it up. So, yeah, Manchester United, their FA Cup rivals in this movie. Okay, so here's something that's a little bit more recent and not about crest or graphic design. So who was Sheffield's top goal scorer in the most recent Premier League season?
Oh, come on. I totally forgot his name.
He didn't even score that many goals, though.
No, they didn't, but I know exactly who he's talking about.
They had a great goals against average. I think it was like second behind Liverpool. Or goals conceded.
Oh, goals
like
conceded.
Second.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like right behind Liverpool.
It was super.
Yeah, press and overlapping back.
Oh.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Adam.
I don't, it's not a striker, I don't. Oh.
No, I know who it is. I know who it is. But I forgot the name.
I'm going to say Egan. I think it's Jonathan Egan.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna say
no, him. I don't think that's his name.
I don't think it's him
either. You have a chance to take an early lead.
I don't fucking remember his name. Oh my God. He's on my fantasy team all year long.
I'm going to need an answer here.
I'm going to say the same thing he says.
No, don't do that, man.
No, because he said this is a chance to take the lead.
I don't remember any Sheffield United players right now.
Okay, you guys disappoint me. There was actually two of them. They were tied for 6 goals each. I would have accepted either guy. It's Oliver McBurney.
All right.
Okay.
And Lise Mousset.
Oh, Mousset.
That's probably okay, who you're
it wasn't
of.
The guy I was no, thinking
so there
of.
Were two strikers then. I could
it wasn't the guy I was thinking of. So. It was that defender I kept putting in my fantasy team. Which
I would have accepted. Oh, the other one is Ludstrom.
Ludstrom, that's the guy.
Yeah,
that's the guy.
I think, I think he was maybe like 4 or 5 goals. Yeah.
Well, no points this week on the trivia board, which bodes well for me next week. I have a chance to jump ahead a bit. So now let's get into some footy flicks.
Let's do it.
Adam, what do you think of these footy flicks?
I preferred the like non-league sections. It was cool that it was Sean Bean doing it. That was pretty much obvious. And I think it lent itself better to those... like non-league scenes where it could look more scrappy and muddy and it could kind of mask the lack of skill. And then the actual games were kind of hard because I'm guessing that must have been to a point like archive footage or something. But the crowd definitely was.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the actual football was because I noticed, one thing I noticed is they didn't have names on the back of their shirts and they would have done by then.
Yeah.
So that made me think it was all recreated for this.
Yeah, one other thing that gave it away was that there was snow during the match.
Oh,
and the match would have taken place in April, I think, right? For the FA Cup semifinals.
Yeah.
Because they filmed it back in January, I want to say.
Okay. For myself, yeah, what I really enjoyed about these footy flicks, I enjoyed the muddy pitches, the rain pissing down, just that pure English, you know, what you think of when you think of football in England, especially at the lower leagues. Enjoyed the footage with for Hallam FC. Just in general, though, with the football, with the footy flicks, actually, it was a lot of that, like, panning at the ball, then panning back to the actor. I did notice a lot of that in this movie, whereas in, you know, Goal, maybe it wasn't as prevalent. Even Bend It Like Beckham, it wasn't as prevalent. Here, you could clearly tell that Sean Bean is probably not that good at football. And you could tell that, you know, some, the camera would pan down at the ball, then pan down, pan back up to the actor. And then some of those goals, it's like, he's essentially going through the entire team to score, which is like the majority of his goals in that movie were actually scored in the same way, where he beats like two or three guys on the bounce and then, you know, either lobs the keeper or just shoots it straight at goal. But yeah, I mean, they were okay. They weren't anything special. They were okay.
So they were kind of shot in such a way that like most of the action took place off screen. Like you were kind of saying, you would see the ball and then you would see the back of people running. And then there was even some scenes where they filmed defenders and the ball wasn't even on screen. So you just saw people's reactions to the football shots. Like you're saying, it was really gritty and they kind of made it a point not to like fantasize it. So there weren't any like Ozzy Ardila's like flicks or flying Vs, obviously. But it's funny. So there's a quote here from Sean Bean. I'm going to tell you guys when somebody had asked him about shooting football scenes. So he said, "I like films about football. It's notoriously hard to shoot and a lot of directors won't touch it. They just think that you can't capture it. But I think we did it to an extent because we didn't concentrate on any fancy moves. We just got the spirit of the game. You know, the thuds, the lugs and the like." So I think in that regard, what he was trying to accomplish, they really did.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And that's probably why the non-league stuff looks better or feels, because you get more of that sense. It's easier to demonstrate in that setting than it is in a bigger, supposedly like more prestigious setting, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm guessing they wouldn't have had much time to film those scenes either. It would have been at half during
the game, just running around at halftime or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did kind of feel like, I think when he scored his second goal that he scored when they were playing Manchester United, he kind of runs over to the fans. That kind of felt a little bit green screenish to me because he was very close to the fans, but for some reason the fans didn't feel that close. I don't know if it was a green screen or not, but it didn't feel like he was actually there with the fans.
It looks like one of those pandemic matches where the fans are on the video board.
The guys are
celebrating.
Maybe you're right though, because maybe they made, because if they did it during halftime, he would have run up there and there's nobody there, right? As much as they might have said, "Oh, well, please, will you stay stay at half?" So maybe they did like superimpose something from actually the game that they were at. Like they could have done it with like, they used to do it by combining films together back then, right? So maybe I'd have to look at it again. Maybe there's a seam you can see somewhere. And that's why you felt like it was green screen.
Yeah.
Cool. So obviously it's going to go in first place on our match day matinee table because we're just starting out. But what's your guys' gut feeling on where this is going to end up? Mid-table contender or?
Mid-table, I would say.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a Damn United. I think I do really like this film, but my reasons for liking this film are definitely different. A lot of it's tied to my nostalgia for Sheffield, for sure. It's a city that means something to me. So I think I like it for that. I don't necessarily like it for its footballing merits or its acting merits.
So we may have some discussions where you're defending it and we're trying to bring it down, kind of defend it like Beckham last season.
Yeah, if I suddenly sound like I'm defending Sean Bean like way too much, you guys have to put me in check kind of and tell me to calm down.
If you can get him on the show as a special guest, we'll keep it at number one.
Well, he hasn't shown up to a family reunion in the 30 years I've been around, so.
Yeah, it's interesting though. I'm just looking at the list of our draft picks and then I haven't seen any of those movies, by the way, except for like Shaolin Soccer and Goal 2, obviously. I don't know. Maybe this is higher than mid-table, to be honest. This is just a gut feeling here.
That is true. We're making a lot of assumptions about the tier one movies we picked, that they're all going to be great. They might not be, right? Just because critics think they're good doesn't necessarily mean we as a like mass audience. So you might be right, to be fair. And there are some stinkers in here. Not as many, perhaps, but yeah.
Yeah. Curious to see where goal two ends up, if it's as good as I remember. But that could be top three.
Yeah.
They are actually trying to do a sequel for this movie. Won't get into too much, but they did write a sequel treatment called When Saturday Comes, Redemption. So I thought he already achieved redemption in this movie, but I guess not. But that's it. Thank you for joining us on the matinee today. Catch up with us on Twitter at Matchday Matinee, or visit matchdaymatinee.com. And if you haven't already, watch our recent episode where we did do a film draft. Each of us picked four films, and we now have our 12 films that were set for the season. And we're going to be releasing a calendar very soon, so you guys can kind of watch films in advance and watch with us, so you actually know what we're talking about. And you guys can probably catch some errors that we make maybe during the synopsis of the films.
Yeah.
Adam, where can people find you? And also, what's going on with Joey Pads for Goalposts season two? What's going on here?
Still stuck in editing hell. Yeah. So I've just been streaming stuff on Twitch instead recently. What was I most recently streaming? Oh, I've been playing this game called Lords of Football, which is like The Sims mixed with Football Manager, kind of. It's not very good. For some reason, Hugo Lloris loves going to the disco at nighttime and like chatting up the ladies for something in that
he's
game.
He's got the little captain's hat on while he's out there.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's such a weird game. But yeah, I've been streaming some of that. And then I've been playing some Battle Royale games, like Call of Duty and stuff. But yeah, I will edit it one day and it'll be out there. You guys will be the first to hear about it.
Nice.
And you've changed your handle, so you're now aducky84 instead of...
Yeah, on twitter.com, yeah.
So aducky84 at Twitter.
Joypad Goalpost still on Instagram.
There you go. Raghav, if the good people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Absolutely. So I'm at Raghav Sandhu, both on Twitter and Instagram. It's as simple as that. It's the same handle. And yeah, but you reach out to me if you have any, you know, questions or would like to see a movie, you know, at some point in the future featured on this show. Either reach out to the Matchday Matinee account or myself personally, and we'll get those. We'll share that as a group and we'll go from there.
Perfect. Thank you. You can find me at Mark83 on Twitter and A3Football on Instagram. That's it. From the Terrace to the Theater of Dreams, we're Matchday Matinee. Thanks for joining us.
Later.
See ya.